Blog Talk I got Radio. Me.
Hey, Turnbuckle Turmoil friends, Sign Guy and QT with you here on a Sunday afternoon like usual. Really fast before we jump into things, if you're looking for wrestling today, you have KDW happening in Jeffersonville, Indiana like usual. Up in our neck of the woods, Blue Collar Wrestling at the North Portland Eagles Lodge like every Sunday. And you also have Big League Wrestling happening over in Yakima, Washington today. So get out there, support some wrestling if you have some near you. And I would like to jump into things. Today we are talking Don Owens era Portland wrestling, something near and dear to us here in the Northwest. I would like to introduce the panel we have today, some people that were there working for Don Owens in Portland wrestling. We have with us Princess Victoria, Doug Masters, and Scott Norton. I want to thank each of you for taking time to be with us. And Mr. Norton, I know your time's a little bit short, so I'll get to you first here. Could you tell us a little bit how it was that you came to be involved in Portland wrestling initially?
Well, what happened is I broke it originally with the AWA, and then they went kind of belly up. And I did some time up in Canada, and then John Nord, my partner with the Lumberjacks, he says, you need to go out west. He says, you need to go to Portland. Don Owens runs the territory out there. You work every night. He says, you're not going to make a whole lot of money. He says, but you'll learn how to do this business. And he said, Don's the fairest guy in the business. He says, you'll love working for him. And I'm telling you, the 9 months I was there, Don Owens is one of the absolute best guys I've ever worked for. Honest as the day is long. I mean, he was just a great guy to wrestle for. And, you know, everybody goes there, it seems, to get a start and work some time there. And I mean, you know, for crying out loud, Kurt Hennig was there, Rick Rue was there, so many guys. And everybody went through there, and it was just, you know, I can understand why each and every one of them just echo the same thing about Don. He was just a true one of the good guys in our business. And I, you know, it was really cool working for him.
You were pretty young in your career at that point, but there are a lot of veterans that were still around the Portland area at that point in time. You had guys like Roddy Piper, the Grappler, Buddy Rose, Colonel DeBeers were all up in this area right around that time. Were you able to learn quite a bit from the veterans that stuck around the Portland territory?
Yeah, I did, you know. And you know, Len Dedden and Rip Oliver was great. I got to wrestle Billy Jack Haynes first night I came in. And, you know, I mean, I worked with some veterans, and, you know, you're on the road every night. Len Denton was awesome. He knew the business inside out. Roddy Piper didn't work a whole lot when I was there. I think he might have worked one match. But it was awesome, you know. And I remember, you know, for me, I started the business a little late. I was 30 years old when I was out there, and I worked every night. We worked 28, 29 days a month. We very rarely had a day off, and you know, you learn how to work in front of the cameras. You learn, you know, you just learn the business, and it was an awesome place to work. And then once you know, you get the call from someplace else, you know, Don was cool as heck, and he welcomed me back anytime. And you know, it was a great territory. I remember when New Japan finally gave me the call to go to Japan, and I was there about 9 months, and I went right to Don. I said, Don, I said, I got a chance to go to Japan. And he says, well, you won't be back. And I said, well, you know, I hope I am. You know, I mean, if I, you know, he says, well, the door's always open here, kid. And, you know, he said, just give me 1 month. And I said, that's fine. So the day when I left, I did my last Saturday night show on TV. He pulled me in the office after we're all leaving. He says, how are you doing for money going to Japan? I says, I'll be all right. Don't worry about it. He gave me $500. He says, here. He says, have a good time.
There you go.
And I said, that was cool as hell, you know. So anyways, I go to Japan. I wrestle. You know, I did a week tour, and it was awesome, you know. And I got, you know, booked, and they were going to sign me to a contract. And when I came back, I had 2 weeks left to work for Don. And after the show on Saturday night, I went to pay him back the $500. And he goes, what's that for? And I said, that's $500 he gave me. He says, well, tell you the truth, kid. He says, just keep it. He says, you've been great. He says, it was really good working with you. And he was just unbelievable. You know, he was just and he was always complaining about pay. He always complained the tiles coming up here, the damn bleachers are falling apart and everything. But Don was the best. I mean, he was absolutely the best guy. And, you know, he cared about you. You know, he didn't act like it all the time. He was kind of a grumpy guy once in a while. But one-on-one, that dude was just absolute gold. And, you know, he was extra good to me. He always complains, I got nobody free to work with, you big bastard. He says, you're killing all my guys. Everybody's complaining about you. He says, I'm going to have to fire you. And I said, come on, Don, you got to have somebody. He says, I'll figure something out for you, son of a bitch. and that was Don, you know. He was always a fun guy. I remember I was wrestling Rip Oliver. And Rip, he was doing a thing where save the spot at all. You know, he's a lumberjack and the whole nine yards out west. And Don Owens is he always opened the matchup. He's a ring announcer. And he goes, from Minneapolis, Minnesota, Scott Crusher Norton, you know, and introduced me and everything. And all of a sudden, then he went to introduce Rip Oliver. He says, and he introduced Rip, and he says, Rip's running to save the, you know, it was supposed to be the spot all, but he said to save her two tigers. We're in the ring, and I just about fell over. And he goes, what the hell are you? He put his hand over the mic and goes, what you laughing at, you big bastard? And you heard everything on the mic. But Don was great.
One of the other people that were there pretty much the entire run of Don Owens' era of wrestling was Sandy Barr. He was interim and still in a lot of the guys that are active today getting into the business and training them. He took over after Don left. But, Mr. Norton, when you were there and Don Owens was still in charge, I know Sandy Barr had a lot of power in the office and was one of the legendary referees. What was it like working with him as well in that run?
Sandy was awesome. I got along with Sandy great. He actually pretty much ran all the road shows. And with his ring that went on the road, you know, because the ring at Crow's Nest State, you know, that was always up. But, no, Sandy was awesome. And great payoff guy. And I remember some shows we'd have 8-9 people. It was that bad. You know, they just kept running the same places, and sometimes people just didn't show up. It was hot, whatever. And then some shows was, you know, 400, 500, 600 was awesome. But Sandy always took care of the same. He was Sandy was a – I thoroughly enjoyed work with Sandy. He was just a classic wrestling guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody, you know, all the boys, and that's what's really cool about, you know, these small territories are gone. Nobody has nothing like that any longer. And I was so fortunate. I remember talking with Dusty Rhodes. We were laid over in Japan for on a weather delay for like 4 or 5 hours. And he, you know, I asked him, I said, "Did you ever work for Don Owens?" He said, "You kidding me? I love that son of a bitch." You know, and they started talking. And, you know, Dusty would tell me when he broke in, all the places he got to work that were just like Portland. And, you know, there was, not hundreds of them, but there was a lot of them. And it's sad that all that left. You know, I mean, all these nice territories where they, you know, because our TV out there was strong. It was great. I mean, every Saturday night, you know, we'd have good crowds, and it was the TV was good. And it was, you know, it was just a lot of, it was a great place to break in, believe me.
Well, we also have Doug Masters with us, and I know that Scott Norton versus Doug Masters definitely happened in Portland. What are your memories of said matches with Doug Masters?
Mine? To be completely honest with you, that's been a long time ago. What is it, 1990? I mean, it's been 27 years. They were good. Doug was great. Doug was a great ring technician, a super, super good wrestler. And, you know, the thing about it is, everybody there was so far ahead of me. When I came in, it was, you know, I mean, I was just fortunate to be able to have the opportunity to get in the same roster with so many veterans. And, you know, and Doug, you know, we're all the same. At some time or another, you're at this point in the business, you know. And some guys just keep going and they keep skyrocketing, you know. But at that point, I was the, you know, we had Steve Dahl, Ricky Santana,
Raven,
Sky the Body. Yeah, you know, there's some guys that can really go.
Bart Sawyer.
You know, pardon me?
Bart Sawyer. You remember Bart Sawyer? He was there then, yeah.
Bart, oh, of course. Yeah, Bart. And then, it was a hell of a territory, man. I mean, and TV was great. I mean, we just did, you know, we put a good show on it. I mean, Saturday night was special. I missed that surround, you know. There's certain places in Japan that I work, Corgan Hall being one of them, is just iconic little. It's a 3,500 seat arena in downtown Tokyo, and everybody loves working there. Well, that's the same thing as when we did our Saturday night shows in Portland. I just loved wrestling in that arena. It was just, you know, when I wrestled, for crying out loud. The first night I came in, I just mentioned Billy Jack Haynes. See, I took too many shots, man. Anyways, I mean, it was sold out. It was unbelievable. The first night I went, I said, "God, this is crazy." And Billy was just awesome. And, I mean, I just got a real good start off out there. And all the guys, I mean, Doug, he knows. Yeah. You remember?
Oh, yeah.
Remember Al Madrill?
Yeah, Al Madrill. Hey, nobody can forget Al Madrill. Good gosh.
Good God. Al, I wrestled Al Madrill, and I pounded the hell. I mean, I caught him on a big-time clothesline. He just laid down, and he says, "Don't touch me." I go, "That's be kind of hard to do. I mean, we just started this match." He says, "Don't touch me."
Yeah, he was serious, probably.
Sandy Barr went 1, 2, 3, and that was it. The only time I wrestled Al quite a bit, you know, him and the little ink pen and this. Al was all right. But, yeah, you know, it was a big group out there. And, you know, we had some guys come in that were, you know, I remember we had Rambo come in and we had guys. Some Samoan fellow come in, was pretty good sized guy, and it was a good place to work. How many years did you work there, Doug?
Pardon me?
How long did you work for Sandy?
Oh, with Sandy, on and off for a little over a year.
Yeah, something like that.
It was, I know, getting my start up there for Don, it was me and Bart Sardis sent our tape up there to Lenny. And he's okay, I'm going to bring you up on a two-week trial run. And then after the show there on Saturday night, he said, all right, boys, I think you ought to find a place to live. So, plus, you know, Scott, the road trips every night. We was home every night, close shots. Like he was mentioning just a while ago, you know, when the territory's down, old Sandy, he always took care of us, you know. I mean,
yep, he did.
Five people to 500, you know, he always took care of us. I was thinking to myself, man, that's one hell of a man right there, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You know, him dipping in his own pocket, have to, you know, to instead of used to paying all the boys off the gate or whatever, and then it was something, Arabs, you know. I'm not the only one that probably was thinking, well, I don't know if we'll be paid tonight or not, but you know what? Every night he always went in that money bag of his, and we always got our pay.
Yeah, you never had to look for him either.
No, he'd come right in.
I mean, he didn't keep you sitting in the locker room late, anything. It was taken care of, boom. And I always respect him for that, you know. And you know, he always respected the guys that would go out there, you know, and there's 10, 12 people out there, and they just do some quick match. You know, we'd do our regular match, and we'd go out there, and you'd work hard like it was a full house, and he respected that, you know. And, Sandy
all
was
right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Don was great. I mean, it's just a good place. It was a good place to break in. I remember, you know, I'm not sure if you were there tonight when Ric Flair wrestled Jimmy Snuka. You know, they brought the big match in, and I said, wow, man. And it was awesome. I mean, and then were you there tonight that John Nord came back in to wrestle Roddy Piper?
I think I was, yeah.
And Nord disappeared underneath the ring?
Okay, yeah.
And he came back out, he's bleeding everywhere, and that Anderson guy was going crazy, and Roddy Piper was going nuts. It was just hilarious.
Yeah, it was, yeah. But, yeah, anytime they would bring in, you know, they bring in, I remember Psycho Sailor, they bring in a couple of guys for a week or two run, and I just couldn't, you know, couldn't handle it. I left there on right when the territory just changed hands, and he's only down in like 2-3 days a week. So that's when I got a call from. Remember that one? Remember that?
No, I was gone before, cause when I was, it was still going just fine. You know,
yeah.
I remember the first night I came in, I came in the first night was a Saturday night TV. And then the following day, Sunday, we're working at Armory someplace close. And I'm sitting in this like little barracks thing, you know. It's got these little small windows. And I mean, and I looked out at the crowd, there's about 40 people there. And I'm going, God, man, this, you know, I didn't understand because the night before it was so crowded. So anyways, the window opens up. It's like a little hinge window.
Uh-huh.
The window opens up. I go, what the hell? And all of a sudden, this guy starts climbing through the window. And I'm looking up. I'm going, what the hell is this dude? Who is this? You know, I thought it was some fan trying to get in or something, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was Roddy Piper.
He
jumps down through the window, and me and Len Denton are sitting there. Where Lenny, he knew exactly who it was. I had no idea. And also he landed on the floor, and also he turns around, he shook my hand, he says, hey, I'm Roddy. I says, hello. And I says, why'd you come in the window? He says, I didn't want to stir up the crowd too much. I says, there's only 40 people out there, buddy.
I'll never,
it was kind of funny.
Yeah, and so, and if he was booked and he had to come to the front or whatever, he'd always put a towel over his face, over his head. That way they couldn't see him. And I asked him one time, I said, "Bud, how come you do that for?" And he goes, "They paid to see me there in that ring." So,
yeah, he is a little different. You know, great guy. I got a lot of him.
Yeah.
You know, and the next time, I didn't meet him again until when I was in the NWO all the years later with WCW. And it's like you knew him all along. You know, he was a good guy, a really good guy.
Mm-hmm. There he was.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm sorry, but I just wanted to call and get in the early part of this show because I love working for Don. And I mean, a lot of people did. I mean, from so many different generations. And I mean, every guy that I met, from Flair to John Nord, Tom Zink, all the guys, uh-huh. Kurt Hennin, I think Larry the Axe Hennin worked for him, for crying out loud. Everybody did. And they all had the same thing, the same bomb. And I just, you know, I really, really cared about that guy. And he really cared about us. And it was really neat. And, but I'm going to have to let you all go because I got some commitments. And, Doug, it's good talking to you again.
Hey, Scott, good to talk to you too, brother.
Portland was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. It was a great, great place to start a career. And I appreciate everybody. And I got to go. So have a great day, y'all. And
all right, guys.
Thanks for
God, God bless you.
Yeah, God
hey,
bless
brother.
You all too, brother. Okay, have a good day. Take over here. I mean, usually the ladies are the ones that do all the talking. Don't you? I'm running out.
You said you only had a few minutes, so I thought I'd be good.
Well, you, I tell you what, you got a lot to add. I know that for sure.
Oh, all right, Lord, yeah.
Y'all take good, have a good little talk here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lord. Well, Princess Victoria, like you said, I know you have a lot to contribute because you've been on with us before and you spoke very fondly of Don Owens. Can you remind the listeners a little bit how it was that you came to first be in Portland?
Well, I was in Portland. I had my first apartment when I was 14, and I was doing restaurant work and all that, and had started going to the matches, and I tended to dress up a little bit for the obvious reasons. And before I knew it, I was getting front row seats for general admission price. Then I was getting front row seats for zero admission price. Then I lost my job, and I had gotten to know Sandy and Dale and Don, you know, through the year that I'd been there, and told Sandy, I said, look, do you have any work for me? Right there, boom, that night, I started learning how to break down the ring. It was a Saturday night. And Sunday mornings, Sandy had his flea market then at the Chautauqua Sports Arena.
Yeah, I remember
that.
So
we'd break down the ring Saturday night, set up for the flea market, which was 200-plus tables, and then we'd go home, get a little bit of sleep, because it was probably 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. By the time we were done, we had to be back by 6:30 because the flea market opened at 7. And I went through doing that. I did some print work at Sandy's print shop because he printed all the programs. Did some photography work. And somehow, I'm not exactly sure how it happened, but somehow I ended up training to be a professional wrestler. You know Sandy. He's slick like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And let me tell you what. Sandy was a heck of a trainer. I thank God that I was trained by Sandy. There were 5-gallon buckets on each side of the ring because it wasn't if you were going to throw up, it was what side of the ring you were going to throw up on during training.
Uh-huh.
And Sandy was one of those guys, he didn't want you to be anything but who you were. He brought in, like Buddy Rose would come in for a day for our training. That Savage would come in. you know, he brought all these different wrestlers in, and they were kind enough to take time with us and show us their styles. And before I knew it, I was Princess Victoria. And my first match, and this is where I really, really loved the fact that I broke in with Don Owens. My first match was supposed to be in November of 1980. That was right after St. Helens blew, and my grandfather had died. And Standy had flown me to Dallasport. My grandfather was in the hospital in the Dallas, and he called me up, and I told Standy, I said, look, my granddad just died. He said, all right, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. He said, you do what you got to do. Well, it wasn't an hour later, Don Owens called me. And I figured he was calling to say, look, if you can't wrestle your first match, I don't need you. It was exactly the opposite.
Wow.
He gave me his condolences.
Why did I hear that?
He said, Princess, you take as much time as you need. Your job will be waiting for you when you're done. And sure enough, it was. As far as the guys that were in there when I was there, I was blessed. I broke in my opinion, the glory days of Portland wrestling. There was Roddy Piper. There was Buddy Rose. There was Ed Wiskowski, the great Stan Stasiak. You know, Red Bastine dropped in every once in a while. Dutch Savage. There were so many of the top guys that were there then. And it was like a family, you know. And I was little sister. They made sure. I didn't have transportation at the time. But before we left the match that night, somebody would pop up and say, Princess, who's taking you to the next match? Well, before we left that arena that night, I'd had a ride. And I consider myself very blessed to have broken in the 80s. In the Pacific Northwest. Don Owens and Sandy Barr were two of the greatest guys that I ever met. They took care of their men, ladies. They took care of their crew. They always had your back, no matter what. I can remember one day we were in the dressing room, and Piper was in the crow's nest. And it was where Piper and Buddy had their great feud. And Piper was up there, and he was going on and on and on and on, and all of a sudden, he says, yep, and I've got enough room in my belly button for the heart of a promoter, a cockroach egg, and Buddy Rose's brain. Well, Don was sitting there watching it, and we all froze. Everyone, there was not a person breathed. Piper comes in, he steps down, and here comes Don. And he's got them little shoulders of his squared, and he's walking up, and he's looking. We all knew Piper was fired. We all knew it. And he walks up to Piper, and he goes, you know what? Piper says, no, what? He says, Don goes, I think that was the best interview I've ever heard. And we all took a breath. But, no, there was no better place, in my opinion, to break in than the Pacific Northwest, because you got trained. You know, you got trained in psychology. You got trained in actual wrestling. You know, one of Sandy's great sayings was, if you can't take out a fan that climbs up in this ring, I don't care how big he is and how small you are, if you can't take him down, you don't have any business in that ring. Because, you know, fans would crawl in the ring every once in a while. And God forbid, don't go to a bar and start a bar fight and lose. Starting a bar fight wasn't the problem. Was if you lost. Because then you'd lose, you know, that kind of crap would spread like wildfire, and you'd lose the respect of the fans. And that's one thing Sandy and Don had in common was, if it wasn't for the fans, we wouldn't be in that ring.
That's exactly right there.
And we didn't do all this bumpity bumpity bump 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 crap. You know, I watched some of the been in a few dressing rooms here in the last few years, And when I was in the dressing room, you know, whoever you were wrestling, you talked about the tie-up, you talked about the high spot, you talked about the finish. You talked about it for maybe 2 minutes. Everything else you did according to what was going on out there. These guys, I've seen them, they will talk for 2 hours. And they're going over every little step and breath they're going to take in that ring.
Isn't that something? That's pitiful.
It is. It's pitiful. Because, you know, I've seen them where somebody misses something and they stand there in the middle of the ring going, shit, what do I do now?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you can see it. They're in total confusion. There's one match that's on YouTube of me and Wendy, and I screwed up the start. But I know I did. Wendy knows I did, but nobody else knew I did. Because within a half a second, we were already going into something else. And
yeah.
I think that's what where wrestling is losing it. With all these writers and all this pre-planning, you know, there's no oomph to it anymore. You know, they start out, the first match used to be basically probably two green guys that were doing a technical match. And the first three matches in the evening, you didn't see any big off-the-top rope, you know, high-flying or anything like that. They were just, they warmed up the crowd. Well, now they start out off the top turnbuckle within 2 minutes of the match. What is there to look forward to?
Nothing.
Right. It's just, and it's sad. It's really sad.
Going to do four or five high spots and I want to have nothing to look forward to in the match. You're right there.
It's exactly. You know, and the one phrase I keep hearing in the dressing room that I would just love to obliterate from the world of wrestling. Well, I got to get my stuff in. Well, if he's doing his stuff and he's doing his stuff, then who's taking care of the crowd?
Exactly.
You know,
right.
I mean, you back in my day, you didn't care if you won or lost. It didn't matter who won. It didn't matter who lost. It's did that crowd get up out of their seats? Did they get their money's worth?
They need some money's worth, yep.
Yep, and these days, it's more about the wrestlers than it is the fans, and I think that's where a lot of the small territories are making some mistakes.
Well, at this point, my co-host QT is standing by. I'm sure QT, being a long-time fan of Portland Wrestling, has a couple of questions. So, QT, if you have any, go right ahead.
Well, thank you, Sun Guy. Hello, hello, Doug. Hello, Victoria.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Victoria, did you know that Don Owens was born in Eugene, Oregon, on March 16th, 1912?
No, I did not.
Yes,
I did not know that.
It was that long ago, and he passed away at the age of 90 in 2002.
Wow.
So he probably remembered a little bit of World War One, and he got to see the millennial in 2002, which is quite an amazing lifetime.
Yeah, that
yes, it is.
Yes. And you know that Don Owens' father was also in the wrestling and boxing business. And he actually bought the heavyweight champ of the world, that was a heavyweight champ of the world in the 1920s, Jack Dempsey, to Oregon.
Boy, I'd like to see that.
Yes. Yes, that
I mean,
was...
That doesn't surprise me, because there had to be some background for the way that Don booked the territory. He had to have had some background in it somewhere, because you were never on the road 2 and 3 days or 300 or 400 miles to go to the next town. Like Scott was saying, even in the 80s, most nights we were home. There were a couple of nights we might do two shows in a row and then come home on the third night. But, no, it doesn't surprise me that there's background there for Don.
Well, now, Victoria, you said that you got your start in Portland Wrestling. You were working a lot of restaurant jobs. Did you work at the Bomber Station? And I may have asked you this before when you were on the show, the Bomber Station.
No, I never worked at the Bomber. I hung out at the Bomber a lot, but I didn't work there. You know, that was Portland Wrestling Central right there.
The Bomber.
You know,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was Portland Wrestling Central. You didn't even have to know who was in what room. You just knocked on a door, and there was going to be a wrestler standing in front of you. I think about the only ones when I was there that didn't stay at the Bomber was Buddy Rose, Rip Oliver, Dutch Savage. I don't think either one of the three of them stayed there, but I know Piper stayed there. Martel stayed there for a while, and then Piper and Martel got their own place. But they were at the Bomber all the time anyway. That was Wrestling Central for us.
The Bomber.
All right. Now, Doug, do you remember a wrestler called the Skull who was often led to the crow's nest to do interviews, and they led him by a chain, and he had a bald head? The Skull.
The Skull. No, like I said, it's not right offhand, I don't. I remember old Psycho Sailor they brought in?
I don't remember him.
They led him into to the ring with a chain, and he had the gimmick. He was Psycho, so he had he foamed at the mouth. It was his gimmick that Lenny would lead into the ring with his chain. But no, the Skull, I've probably seen him, but like I said, it's been a while back. Like Scott said, too many headshots in the day.
Right.
No, I don't, but you know how it is. Sometimes you lose names, but if you see the guy right when you walk in the restroom or wherever, you can see one of the boys, you're like, oh, yeah, how you doing? And the name would come back to you. The face would go with the name then. But, yeah, there's just so many of them that know. Not right offhand, I don't, brother.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Victoria, did you ever wrestle in the Longview, Kelso area in the early 80s?
I'm sure I did. I worked for Don and Sandy. At that time, Don was the main promoter, and Sandy did most of the road work, except for Eugene. That's where Elton Owens, Don's brother, was running. But I'm sure I did. Lord, we were working six, like the guys said, we were working 6-7 days a week. You know, if you had a birthday or something like that, or a party or something, you know, house thing you had to do, you literally had to ask for the time off. It's not like today when you work, you know, one or two matches a month.
Yes.
So I'm sure, yes, I work both Kelso and Longview.
Yes, so it was kind of like some of those bands in the late 70s and early 80s, like Black Flag. They had to travel from gig to gig almost every night in a van, five to a van, and they'd often have to drive 400 or 500 miles. It wasn't like Van Halen.
Right. No, we never did that. We never drove 400 or 500 miles to a gig working for Don. You know, I was helping Sandy promote. He was doing a week shot, and he told me, he says, now I want you to look at that map. He said, now I want you to pick a spot where the towns aren't more than 100 miles apart and not less than 50 miles apart. Because less than 50 miles, your fans would travel to both shows. But more than 100 miles, it was too hard to drive. You know, I mean, I got spoiled in the Pacific Northwest. When I went down to South Carolina and started working for Moolah, I can remember one night I drove my poor Chevy Cavalier. I drove it from Alexandria, Louisiana, to Tampa, Florida. Bill Watts put us girls on early so we could get out of there, and we literally jumped in the car, and we stayed in the car for 21 hours. And
damn.
It was 1,021 miles between Tampa and Alexandria. And the only stops we made were for gas. And if you were going to eat or use the bathroom, you better do it when we got gas. Because until that needle hit empty, we didn't stop again. So, and I really wasn't prepared for the traveling that I did once I started working for Mula.
Wow.
It was intense. Like working for Jarrett, too. Like working for Jerry Jarrett, that territory there in Tennessee, it was a long, brutal territory.
Oh, you ain't kidding, it was.
Oh, man, every night, same. I mean, you'd be getting home the time you got up, went got something to eat, went to the gym, went tan, went to the town, was ready to leave. You know, you didn't have no, you didn't really have no downtime at all. It was highway time,
right.
Windshield time.
Right. Oh, yeah, and Bill Watts, you know, Bill
yeah.
Watts and because he covered Oklahoma, Louisiana, Lord, you know, there were miles and miles and miles every day.
Mm-hmm. See, and then you get up there, then get in there and do your match. Try to do it correctly or whatever, you know. So all the then get in like you said and do it again.
That's it. You eat, you sleep, you get up, just like you said. And it was every day was the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Every
you know?
Day.
And
yeah,
it just, yeah, Don spoiled us, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm telling you, home early every night. I mean,
yeah.
You back to
yeah,
Eugene
it,
was on a weekly deal. Eugene on Friday nights was the longest trip there really was during the week. You know, we hit Salem, McBeanville,
mm-hmm.
Our normal towns around there, and then on the spot shows we do, like you said, Sandy always had them booked out where the fans, it was nothing to them to get in their car to come see us, you know, because it wasn't very far to go. It was all. Certainly during school nights, school years, you know, they were usually home. Kids were usually home 10 o'clock, something like that, 11 o'clock, the time to get to bed early enough to go to school, you know.
Yeah, well, I can remember when I was still a fan. I hadn't started training yet, and I had worked for I was working for Denny's Restaurant on 23rd and Burnside, and I decided, all right, I'm going to take a week off. I took a week off, and I got on a Greyhound. And I went to Salem. Well, started out in Portland, then to Salem, then to Eugene. I think we went to Goldendale and Yakima. About the
uh-huh.
third night, Buddy's walking down the middle aisle, and I, of course, got a seat right on the aisle. And he stops, and he looks at me. He goes, damn, girl, you're everywhere. And it wasn't much later that I started training for wrestling after that.
Wow.
Well, you got to see how it really was, didn't you?
It was awesome. When I say we were a family, we were a family. You
oh,
know, I can remember going. Sandy had set Velvet and I up to Al Tomko, and it was Thanksgiving. Well, most of the number one as the crew, we were not only the wrestling crew, we were the ring crew. You know how cheap Al Tomko was. That boy could pinch a penny so tight, Washington cried in pity for Abe. And, go ahead.
That's like Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob, that penny to pincher.
Right?
Yeah.
Al was something else. He made the mistake. Velvet and I had when we went up there. Al made the mistake of asking Velvet and I if we wanted to wrestle at a bar in the mud. And we both.
Whoa.
I know we both grew horns. I know we did. I mean, and it was like, really? You want us to go from what we're doing here to wrestling in the mud in a bar? Oh, well, it's good pay. You'll make $200 a night. I said, no, I won't, because I'm not going to do it, neither is she.
Yeah.
They were
Do you think that was an insult, or?
I took it as an insult, yeah.
I would have cared.
I really did. You know, it was, it just hit me wrong. You know, I worked too hard at that time. You know, Sandy trained me for over a year. And like I said, there were buckets on each side of the ring. I can remember one day, Matt Day, Terry Allen was training. This was after Buzz put the screws to him. And so he came with us to finish his training. And we're in the Chautauqua Sports Arena. We're in the ring. And if you've been in the Chautauqua Sports Arena, you know there's a great big door, because what it looks like is it was an old warehouse. And Sandy had the big door open. It was big enough to drive an 18-wheeler through. And Sandy had the door open, and we were learning drop kicks. And damn Terry, oh, my God. I almost killed him that day. I've done 20, 25 drop kicks. I couldn't get my butt up in the air to save my soul. Terry walked out there, has never taken a drop kick, jumps up, hits the guy straight in the chest, and looks him dead in the eye while he's doing it. And we proceeded. Yeah, that's a joke between us every time we see each other. He's done any drop kicks lately? Shut up, Terry.
Yeah, there you go.
But we were working so hard that day. I remember I was standing on the opposite side of the ring. Terry had taken a knee in the middle of the ring after doing a set of something. And the sun had hit just right. And it was like 70, 75 degrees. And I looked over at Terry, and there was steam coming off the top of his head. That's how hard Sandy worked us.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
That's buckets around the other side of the ring. Yeah, well, that's where you learn how not to. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, if it hadn't been for the way Sandy trained me when I broke my neck in Philly in September of 84,
mm-hmm.
I would probably either not be here or be in a wheelchair. But thanks to the shape that Sandy insisted we be in, you know, I'm walking around today.
That's why he did that, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he knew there were going to be injuries.
Oh, yeah.
But, no, it's, I'm sitting here reminiscing about some of the old days, and just, there was one day I was riding, I had a habit of riding with the heels. I always wanted to be a heel, but they always made me be a damn baby face.
Yeah.
The only time I got to be a heel is when I went to Japan.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you remember Rip's old motorhome?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was me, Buddy, Stan, Rip, and there was somebody else there, maybe Tommy Rogers. He was a baby at the time. And the guys are all trying to make me believe that Stan can call cows. Well, I'd had enough ribs pulled on me at that time. I wasn't going for it. I told him, I said, no, y'all ain't hanging me up on this one. No way. Well, about 10 minutes later, off to the left, here's a field full of Angus cows. Rip pulls the motorhome off the side of the road. Stan jumps the ditch, leans up against the fence, and he moves. And he sounded just like a cow. Mm-hmm. Well, when he moved, there was this big old bull in the center of the herd. And he lifted his head and he looked at Stan. And Stan moved again, only this time he scraped his feet back and forth like a cow will do just before they're ready to charge.
Yeah.
He did that about twice, and all of a sudden, that dang bull charged that fence. Stan wasn't ready for it. He went to try to, you know, jump backwards over the ditch, and he missed. And he fell in this ditch. And if you know how big Stan Stasiak is, or was. Here comes this big man up out of this ditch, and he looked like something out of the Swamp Thing. He had mud dripping all over his head. There was clumps of grass all over him. And he just looks at me and says, you believe me now, Princess?
Wow. He had to go through all that just to make you believe him. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that was back in the day.
Yeah, I know.
I can...
yeah.
Hey, Doug, did you guys ever pull the niacin switch on aspirin?
Oh, yeah, we did that. Oh, yeah. Turn you redder than a beet.
Yeah, and you didn't know it until you got in the ring and started moving.
Enough.
I can't remember who it was. There was some prima donna came into the territory. And mm-hmm. he never had aspirin. He never had baby oil. He never had tape. You know, he was always bumming off everybody. Well, one day, and he'd aggravated the guys with his mouth, and one day he asked Buddy Rose for some aspirin. And Buddy slipped him two niacins. And he tapped me on the back. He says, go watch. That man wasn't in that ring for 5 minutes before his entire body turned as red as a stop sign.
Wow.
He never asked for tape.
Tanning bed, yeah.
Huh?
It looks like you have a hot tanning bed, yeah. It did.
Yeah,
he probably
exactly.
He probably never asked for aspirin before, did he?
Or tape, or baby oil. And he started minding his mouth in the dressing room.
Wow.
Well,
you know, sometimes,
go ahead.
Sometimes it takes something like to do to a greenhorn and put him in his right place, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right. Was Tony Bourne still there when you were there?
Tony Bourne, yeah.
Well, Matt and Tony were tagging when I was there. And Matt kept, you know, he just went out of his way to agitate me. And I guess Tony realized it one day. You know, I kept my mouth shut. I didn't say anything. I was biding my time for my time. And one day I walked into, it happened to be Eugene, walked into the dressing room. Tony says, come here. Yes, sir. Because, you know, he was an old timer. You did what the old timer said. And he says, when I tell you, he says, I want you to sit down on my lap. And I want you to go with everything I do. And I'm sitting on his lap. I got my hand around him. My back's to the door. Door opens, and all of a sudden, Tony laid a lip lock on me from hell. And Tony was a gentleman. You know, this was totally out of character for Tony. Tony was one of the greatest guys you could ever meet. And so I'm going with it. It's got to be a rib. I know it's got to be a rib, but I'm not sure if it's on me or somebody else. And about that time, I hear Matt Bourne go, oh, hell no. And Tony raises up his head. He said, Matt, you will not disrespect your new stepmama. For 2 weeks, I rode in Tony's car. I slept in Tony's room. Now, there were two beds, of course. But for 2 weeks, Matt thought I was his new mama.
Wow. So
he never
on
picked
him.
Me again. Oh, yeah. He never picked on me again. He stayed as far away from me as he could.
Wow.
Good days. Those were the good old days.
Good days that we always will remember.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Got enough memories of last my life.
Victoria, you said commented about opening matches where they'll take to the turnbuckle within the first 2 minutes. There was one person at Portland Wrestling that always seemed to lose all his matches, and they always put him at the first card of the event. And I'm talking about Haru Sasaki. Do you remember the Japanese wrestler Haru Sasaki?
No, I don't, but I remember a guy they did the same thing to, and that was pretty much Eric Emery.
Oh, okay.
Eric Emery, yeah.
Eric was one of the most underused guys in the business.
He was, wasn't he?
And, yeah, I mean, the man could wrestle. If you wanted a technical match, you got a technical match, you know? If you wanted a bar brawl, you got a bar brawl, but they didn't use him to his full potential.
Oh, okay.
They did in Portland. They did in Portland once he left Portland. You know, world class down for USWA. That's who brought me into the Jarrett territory. Was Eric Emery when he was booking down there?
Yeah.
Yeah, he brought me in there, and I just when he was booking down for World Class, he brought me in there too. But yeah, I see what you're saying. If he wanted, if he can go in there last technically, he'd be all there. And if he wanted to fight, take it all over the building, back to the concession stand, out back, he was there too. So
he did a hell of a promo. Yes, yes, the man had a mouth. He definitely had a mouth. He was a good friend of mine. I met him before I was in the business. And I just saw him a couple years ago in Tennessee at Scott Teal's reunion. And that was a blast from the past.
Didn't he get some bad car wreck a while back?
If he did, I don't know about it. I hope not.
Well, it might have been a few years back. When was the last time you seen him?
Saw him probably in 2013, 2014.
Okay, yeah, this happened before then. So, yeah, I mean, he must have got all over it. Like broke a leg or something. It was a pretty bad deal. I mean, what I heard, go ahead.
If you look across wrestling about people who died, that's probably one of the two biggest reasons that wrestlers die. One is from car wrecks, and usually falling asleep at the wheel because you're too damn tired.
That's true. That's true. Always was nervous about falling asleep when you let somebody else drive, because I always made sure, man, that driver's awake. Always
that's
awake,
right.
You know, because he's getting a free.
Yeah,
if you're asleep in the back, you know, your life is in his hands, basically. And
exactly.
Yeah, do not put nobody that you know is sleepy behind the wheel. Because I guarantee if you're trying to get some sleep, you're not going to be able to get any because you're going to land back here worried they're going to wreck.
Exactly. Well, see, and back in the day, you know, it didn't matter if it was Piper's car or 80's car or Rick's car. You know, whoever was the least tired was who was driving. But we never really had that big of a problem with that. In Portland, it was after I left the Portland territories that really became an issue.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Brought in a lot of talent from the Midwest and Upper Midwest. I was watching an old Portland wrestling tape last night myself, ironically, that I converted to DVD. Do you remember a wrestler named Chief White Cloud?
Chief White Cloud, yes, I do. He always reminded me of Chiwahoo McDaniel. He had the psychology, and he had just that the gimmick he used. He had a way of getting over the people to make them believe it. And but as far as I never did really have any matches with him, but I do remember him vaguely. But what I do remember him. He always had a. I always thought he would have a future in this business, and but I don't know when he left that the territory. What year was that DVD we was watching?
That was like 1982.
Oh, okay, yeah, but I'd
already left then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was already doing New York and Louisiana and all that by then.
Well, Victoria, I'm reading an article about Don Owens and Portland wrestling in Slam magazine, and they said that the regulars at Portland wrestling, they were there week after week, 52 years a week on end, and the only way to get a ringside ticket was pretty much if one of them died, you literally had to be in their will. Now, I remember an old lady that he always had a first row ticket, and the cameraman would usually pan in on her. And I distinctly remember one day Buddy Rose was in the ring, and I guess he knew this old lady because he started jawing at this old lady. And the old lady held this umbrella up, and she shook it at Buddy Rose, and Buddy Rose acted real afraid, and he went and hid behind Sandy Barr.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and didn't she have a partner that she went with? That there were two of them that sat side by side on the front row. One of them had a cane.
Yes.
And one of them had a cane, and I can remember one of them smacking Buddy Rose with that cane one time.
Oh. Oh, okay.
And you're right about front row. You had to inherit the seat or get lucky like me and get pushed up there.
Yes. Yes.
And they did. You saw on the first four rows, you saw the same people week after. We had really loyal fans. You know,
yes.
We gave them what they wanted. You know, we worked for them. We made sure that $5 that they paid for ringside, they got their money.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, one thing about it was a trifecta of three big reasons that Portland Wrestling kind of slid into oblivion. One was cable TV, and when cable TV came, a lot of people stayed at home and watched Portland Wrestling on Channel 13. That was
yep.
part of cable.
Yep, I remember that. And, well, and then you had Vinny Jr., who bought up all the big talent.
That's true. Yes.
You know,
he siphoned off quite a few wrestlers.
Well, and then Senior, the reason that a lot of the small territories lost their TV spots was we were getting paid. The promoters were getting paid to have their wrestling shows on TV by the advertisers. And once Senior started paying for his wrestling to be on TV, then everybody across the nation decided all the wrestling arenas, you know, all the wrestling promoters needed to pay for their time. And
yeah,
it was quite expensive, and a lot of them couldn't do it.
Yes. Yes, and there was another factor that you had the Oregon State Athletic Commission having all these rules affect Don. And while a lot of the states didn't make it a point of enforcing the regulations of their athletic commission, Oregon was the exception. And Barry Owens, Don Owens' son, said it that really hurt this over-zealousness of the regulations that the Oregon State Athletic Commission placed on Don Owens.
Oh, yeah. That does not surprise me in the least. You know, the
yes.
same thing's going on in Connecticut and a few of the northeastern states now where they're just – it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, you can't get outside the ring. You know, you can't wrestle on the mats, on the floor, behind the rails. It's just, you know – it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yes. Yes. Now, Doug, here's a question. A lot of wrestlers back in the 70s and 80s would sustain these injuries, but they really didn't have too much to complain or anyone to complain to. Did you yourself suffer a lot of concussions?
Yes, I did. Sometimes I suffered them when I didn't even know I had them. And then that's one way I had to get my neck fused back together. In four places was I have years of taking bumps, concussions, and I remember a few days coming up to me going to see a neurologist. I lowered my chin to my chest, and my hands, my fingers would go numb. I said, "Man, ain't something right." It felt like my hand or something fell asleep. So I checked the neurologist, went to see him, and he ran a MRI. Come back and said, "Well, you know, you got 400 discs that really need to fuse back together. It's lucky you're still walking now." And I got to talk to him afterwards, and he goes, "You know, when you know you have a concussion, you're basically kind of knocked out. Because a lot of times when you do suffer a concussion, that you're still in there going, you know, football, professional wrestling, whatever kind of contact sport there is, sometimes you just don't really know when you do get a concussion and that you should have been pulled out, but you just get used to it after a while and just keep going and going." And later on, like Scott was saying, too many headshots will catch up with you, you know, and it does.
Yeah, it's kind of like Ernie Shavers hitting Muhammad Ali
Ernie Sabers.
Well, I'm telling you.
All right. Well, Doug and Victoria, it was good talking with you. I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy now.
All right. Thanks for phoning in. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you, QT. Well, Mr. Masters and Princess Victoria, we've come to the end of the show already. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on here. I'm sure all of us could sit here for hours and talk about Portland wrestling. It was a really great territory. The people up here remember it very, very fondly to this day. We're definitely going to have to do this again and get you guys back with us, talk some more Portland wrestling. And I want to thank both of you very much. And I want to thank Scott Norton for taking time out of his schedule to be with us here today. There's plenty of independent wrestling in the Portland area today that you still can get out and watch shows in the Portland area. DOA, WCWC, Blue Collar Wrestling, all very viable. Lots of people there trained by some of the Don Owens era wrestlers. So get out there, support all of the wrestling you can out there. Portland has a rich wrestling history. If you're not familiar, research it. Lots of places on the internet you can go to learn about the Portland wrestling tradition. So get out there, support that. Thank you to everyone that took time to be with us today. Thanks to all the listeners. We will be back with you next week.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it. Nice talking with you, Doug.
Nice talking to you too, ma'am.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.